Good morning and welcome to Shattering Mesh, the program which is devoted to those of you who are open to the realization that all of the world's religious, political, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, rotten to the core, unsalvageable, counterproductive. I am Yada. We have Kirk here with us this morning because in this morning we're going to be speaking of the things that matter. And then in the second hour we're going to be speaking to IQ Al-Rasuli about the most horrific myth ever promoted by humankind, Islam. Kirk, it was a tough day yesterday as I looked at the images of politicians and American citizens and the media all giving the Pope a godlike status. It was Bonner, who was the one that invited him from Ohio. Almost every moment he was with him, he was in tears.
Really?
You know, if he wants to have a religious experience, that ought to be on his own damn time. You know, don't, in America, flaunt your goddamn religion in front of me.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be religious? You want to be stupid? Go ahead. You've got that right. Don't flaunt it in front of the rest of us. And the way that the audience and the Congress responded to him. And, you know, he's up there in his clown suit. And they're all applauding and giving him a standing ovation.
Yeah.
It just made me want to barf. I mean, from the beginning to the end of that whole experience. And then to have this moron wax poetic about things like we ought not have the death penalty in America, and yet I don't think there's any institution in all of human history, beginning with Imperial Rome and then morphing into the Roman Catholic Church, that has killed more people than they have.
I can agree with that.
And then it talks about we ought to have a different plight for the poor, and we ought to seek the same opportunities for everyone. And you're saying, wait a minute, it's not my job to seek an opportunity for you.
No.
You know, and it's this notion that I ought to be working to give you things that you were unwilling to work for or unable to work for is somehow a appropriate, practical idea is just utter nonsense, particularly when you put it in contrast of Roman Catholicism, which began under Emperor Theodosius, who specifically created the feudal states, the fascist conditions of Europe, and imposed an impoverished class that represented 99% of the people and impoverished those people for 16 centuries.
Mm-hmm. Rome wiped out the middle class. What little middle
class. Oh, yeah, what little there was, they absolutely obliterated.
Yeah.
With their... I mean, no wonder he considers capitalism the dung of the devil. Roman Catholicism is feudalism.
Yeah.
Where lords are served by serfs who are essentially their slaves.
Right. They have a few noblemen that they hire. You know, you have to pay off the wardens.
Wow.
But other than that, there's no middle class at all. No. No motive. No reason to do anything.
Right, and then the media says, you know, there's something in Roman Catholicism for everyone, and this man was, you know, asked about communion to non-Roman Catholics, and he's saying, oh yeah, it's available to everyone, having no concept of the fact that there's no Eucharist, no communion, nothing even remotely akin to it from Yahweh's perspective. Nothing even remotely, although it's a Babylonian religious tenet.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't realize that the reason that there's something in Roman Catholicism to appeal to everyone is because it's an amalgamation of all religious appeal. as well as political appeal.
Did God just never offer, Yahweh, did he never offer a plan on how society should work?
Yeah, he did. He's very, it's very detailed about it, you know, and he established a systematic means of individuals toiling for their own benefit and the benefit of their families, and still enabling those who were on the fringes, who were going through a difficult time for one reason or another, to eat, to be sheltered, to be kept warm, to be clothed, but not to have any of these things provided for them, but simply to have access to food in the field, but they still have to harvest it, and they still have to cook it, and access to wood, but they still have to make their home, and access to wool, but they still have to weave their clothes. Because he realizes you're given something for nothing, you will have no appreciation of it, which is why salvation is not a free gift. Now, you don't earn your salvation, but you earn your opportunity to engage in a relationship with Yahweh through his covenant by engaging in the terms and conditions of the covenant, and salvation happens to be a byproduct of you acting in that way.
Yeah.
Anybody that is given something for nothing has no appreciation of it, and it destroys their character. God knows it, which is why he is opposed to the liberal, socialist, and communist ideals of this man who simply wants to be accepted by the elitist because he knows his religion is dying, and the only way for him to maintain his influence, his power, is to hitch his wagon to socialist secular humanism, which is exactly what he's doing.
I couldn't watch him. Tara and I just couldn't. I can't afford to replace my TVs.
Oh, by the way, I only watched him for a few minutes this morning. My proclivity. My proclivity is I don't watch videos. What I do is I read, because I can read and assimilate information reading it. You know, it's in the range of about 10 times faster, almost 10 times faster than you can watch a video. Moreover, I can copy and paste the written word into a Word document, then I can share it accurately in this program as opposed to trying to paraphrase it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I will tell you, in the 2 or 3 minutes that I watched this morning, what I saw was bone-chilling. Every time he'd make a point, and it was always a socialist, secular, communist point, every time he'd make a point, he'd have that smirk. That smirk of, you're buying it. I knew you'd buy it. I knew you'd swallow it down like it was Kool-Aid. I know it. What fools you are. And how clever I am. That was his laughing little smirk with every comment he made. God, it was just revolting. Then you look out and there's this whole sea of Roman Catholics and parents that had brought their children to corrupt them, all goo-goo over this man who was treated as, well, I can't say he was treated as if he were God, because we treat God as if he's crap. We pay no attention whatsoever to God, but we'll sure as hell pay attention to a fraud like this. When God appears in our image, when a God is conceived like us, we're pretty giddy as a people. The real one we don't like very much. I'm speaking of humanity as a whole, not of you and I.
No, I understand. I'm sure everyone else understands.
You had a couple of questions or points you wanted to make. Excuse me for my diatribe, but I was just I'm repulsed.
I understand. I have a Christian question, but I also
Go ahead.
Well, let me throw two things in, two observations on Thursday that I read before the yesterday show, and this was really tragic because the dictator of North Korea made more sense than anyone else. He explained that he had the U.S. not invaded Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya, everyone would have stayed home, and you wouldn't be having this crisis of everyone going to Europe, all these Muslims.
Well, so it's amazing when a scumbag, and he's a scumbag who presents himself as if he were God, and tortures his own people, starving them to death, make statements that are accurate when those that are elected in the West continue to deceive. That really tells you how far we've fallen, isn't it? When the best dictator, the best leader in the Islamic world is Saddam Hussein, and the world would be vastly better off if he was still in power, you know we have really fallen. Mm-hmm. When Assad's a better option than the Islamic State, when Muammar Gaddafi is vastly superior to what we have left in the residue of our bombing, wow.
What was the Egyptian?
We ended up getting Sisi, who is a fundamentalist military dictator, an Islamic dictator, leads a military coup to take power away from Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood, and all because the United States didn't like the fact that the previous dictator didn't allow free speech and free elections, Mubarak. And so what did we end up with? The Muslim Brotherhood? And they were so horrific, what did we end up with? A military junta. Do you know that the day before yesterday, the French decided, you know, the Russians, Putin, he is such a bad dog, that the warships that they have paid for, that we're building for them, we're not going to give them those warships. You know who we're going to give them to? The Egyptians.
Really?
Yeah, the most repressive government on earth today, in terms of squelching all freedoms, it would be the Egyptian government. And not only did they give them these warships, they gave them 24 of their most advanced fighters. What does Egypt need with warships and fighters? Can you tell me who's about ready to invade Egypt that they could use advanced warships that carry attack helicopters and tanks? And 24 of France's most sophisticated fighter bombers? Maybe you could come up with a list of who's prepared to invade Egypt, that would be an appropriate arsenal to deploy against.
Well, if we were Ephraim, and Ephraim joined, you know, had a lot of association with Egypt in order to destroy Yehuda.
Yeah.
History's kind of repeating itself, isn't it?
It sure is. It sure is, because we are so much like Ephraim. The United States is the closest manifestation to Ephraim today, particularly when you realize that that almost half of the world's Ephraim population, Jews estranged from Yehudah, live in the United States, mm-hmm. and that the United States government is in cahoots with Egypt in opposition to Israel.
Well, the other article that came along was on Thursday was, well, you mentioned it, is Putin, and he said that he wanted to work with Obama in the Middle East to destroy the Islamic State and even replace Assad. He even threw out the caveat he would replace Assad and stabilize the region.
Mm-hmm.
If you were really there to wipe out ISIS, number one, you just stop giving them guns.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, if you couldn't stop that now because it's already done, then you would want an ally to do that. It would be better that we were closer to Putin
mm-hmm.
than against him, because that's going to lead to World War III.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's we're already in World War III, which is the Sunni Shia conflict, and
but we're not in a nuclear war yet,
right? So yes, and you've got now, because of the positioning of the parties, China and Russia, in league with Iran and Syria and Shia Islam, and you've got the United States and Europe in league with Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Kuwait, Qatar et al., and Sunni Islam. And so what is a religious war between Muslims that is being funded and armed by the United States primarily, but Europe secondarily, you know, is going to erupt into a war that is going to be the most devastating war in human history.
But if you could put an end to the civil war or the religious civil war, you don't need refugees. People don't, you know.
Well, of course. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, how many times have we been through that? If the United States hadn't, on a pile of lies during the Bush administration, invaded Iraq and Afghanistan and hadn't bombed Libya, there would be no refugees coming by the millions into Europe. That is correct.
But, I mean, my whole point was, you know, the only people making any sense was a dictator and a dictator. I mean, all the people that are supposed to be so horrible.
Right. Saddam Hussein.
Have a clear picture of what's going on. They have some.
Al-Assad and Gaddafi. Those three dictators were in a position to positively influence the conditions found in the region, by positively. But I'm only talking about relative positivity. They're infinitely superior to what we have today, and we chose to oust all of them, and without being able to look at the consequence.
Yeah, well, it would have saved a million lives of Christian lives if the Christians cared, and the same with the cops, which is nothing but a Orthodox version of the Christianity.
Oh, yeah.
So that brings me to my Christian question.
Yeah, Christianity is essentially being annihilated in the Islamic world.
Yeah, and the Pope, I don't think the Pope brought that up, probably.
No, he didn't bring that up, did he? No, he was tongue-lashing the United States, so he didn't want to. No, he's like the abominator. Global warming is the biggest threat to mankind, not Islam. And yet, Christianity is being, listen, you and I are opposed to Christianity, but we're also opposed to one religion seeking to annihilate another. And Islam is annihilating Christianity in its midst. And this man said nothing about it.
So let me, these are rhetorical questions, so it's not.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're going to play the same game I play with you regularly, okay?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
A little bit, but it's more.
Yosha, by the way, loved rhetorical questions. Yeah, rhetorical questions are teaching devices, so you're in good company.
Here's a coin. It's got somebody's name on it, you know, whose name is on the coin. Yeah, so he did do that. Yeah, very much.
Right, and that's a rhetorical question. Yes. Whose image and name are on that coin?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Caesar. Well, then give unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. He asked a rhetorical question. You know, how many times when they said, well, what should we do to be saved? And he would say, well, what does the Torah say? Do you think that he doesn't know what the Torah says? Is he asking, when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Is he asking a question seeking an answer, or is it a rhetorical question?
Teaching to the end.
Right. It's a rhetorical question. He's using his rhetoric to provide an answer, to lead someone to the answer. It's not posing a question. He's using rhetoric to lead people to an answer. That's what a rhetorical question is, where you say, oh, okay, well, I mean, you put it that way, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's saying, my God, why are you forsaking me? Why are you separating yourself from me? When he says that, if people listen to him, it leads them directly to the answer. Well, he has to, because we're transitioning from Pesach to Matzah. God can't die.
But you'd have to know what Matzah is. Somebody have to
write
the book.
Right, right. You'd have to know who Yahweh is. You'd have to know what he's doing on Pesach and Matzah. You'd have to know how Bukkotim is going to follow those 3 days. You'd have to actually understand what's happening. You might even have to read the Psalms, particularly the 22nd Psalms that begins with the same word, my God, why are you forsaking me? To figure out why he was making that rhetorical statement.
Hmm. Christianity.
Yes, sir.
It claims that that Paul was that Yahweh felt that Paul would have to he'd have to call Paul in order to change his plan of salvation. Correct.
Well, that's Paul's claim. If it wasn't for Paul,
but
it's then
by Christianity and taught by Christianity. So
yeah, that's their view that if it wasn't for Paul, we'd still be stuck with that horrible Torah and no one could be saved.
Now
Christians will say no, it was Jesus that made that happen. I said no, look at his words, look at his actions. He didn't say anything of the sort. So it's wholly on Paul, this idea that without him and without his books, Christians would still be reliant on the Torah.
That law. Yeah.
All right.
Right. And so all the Christians agree that Paul's one of the apostles. He is the head apostle now because he's taken over 99% of the world, correct?
Well, that's from their point of view. That is,
well,
that is true. From
yeah.
God's point of view, no, he's not an apostle.
But then all the Christians agree that Yahweh existed forever, right? They call him the Alpha and the Omega.
They like Greek, we like Hebrew.
We say hi,
yeah. Right. Yeah, he's they view that their caricature of God, Jesus Christ, existed forever. But by the way, he didn't exist forever. Diminished manifestation of Yahweh has not existed forever.
Well, you can't be manifestation then, could you?
The reason that you can't exist forever is that until matter was created, there was no means for Yahweh to express himself in a material way. So that was the whole Arius controversy, the Arian controversy from Arius that he says, wait a minute, Yahusha was begotten. And so you have to start with God, Yahweh. And you can't make your Christian Jesus Christ the summation of the totality of God. That's impossible. Because, first of all, God can't die. And second of all, you can't have a diminished manifestation of Yahweh before there's a physical world.
So
and Yahweh existed before the physical world. So, yeah, it's absolutely impossible.
So we've got a Christian God they claim was forever. Before time, existing now, and future time. And they all agree that Yahweh told the prophets what to say in regards to future history, right, in regards to what we call prophecy. And he's 100% accurate, and everybody agrees with that. So why then, here's the question, why then did Yahweh not see his era and have to start at the very beginning,
because
I can see everything, and why then would he have to nullify, or would he need to choose Paul to change it if he's all-knowing and he could see the future?
If Yahweh, in his first revelation, in the first book, in the beginning, Bereshith, Genesis, laid out the future history of humankind for 7,000 years in his opening address, and knew exactly how man was going to separate from him and how he was going to reunite man with him from Eden and back to Eden, how in the world could he have screwed up with Christianity? Between 500 and 1400 years before Christianity was conceived, Yahweh, through his prophets, revealed the totality of human history from beginning to end, from the creation of the universe all the way through our return to the conditions found in the Garden of Eden, all playing out from his perspective over 7,000 years from ours here on Earth, the conclusion of a 15 billion year experience. Since he is witness to the future, why would God advocate for the first 4,000 years of the human experience, a plan which he knew from his own ability to see the future was a complete and utter failure, in fact, demeaning, enslaving, only to then have a extraordinarily horrible man, Paul.
By his own definition.
By his own definition. Demon-possessed, a sexual pervert, ruthless, vicious, conniving, a fraud. Why would he have him then create a new plan? Why not, if God knew the future, he just, let's say that this, that God's really stupid by comparison to Paul. That Paul's, I mean, it's really hard to even say.
Yeah,
I can't keep a straight face.
I feel like a crackle in the sky.
the author of DNA and the creator of the universe is dumber than Paul, the author of those 13 horribly written contradictory letters. and that he can see the future. He saw Paul's brilliance. Why wouldn't he have just laid out Paul's plan from the onset?
And these people applauded that man who claims this.
Oh, I know.
They worship this man who claims this. They kiss his ring.
Oh, God.
Yep. You know, how, by the way, can the Bible that Christians hold up and says the unerrant word of God, the good book, I heard several Catholics said he was quoting from the good book. No, he actually didn't quote from
the good book.
The good book. And the good book is the Torah, the prophets and the Psalms, not a book named after confusion, the seat of Satan, Babel. But that aside for all facts aside. How can that be the word of God if in fact the first 80% of what you're carrying around is in wholesale conflict with the last 20% that you're toting around, and that in fact they're at war with each other? How is that possible that they could both be true? Would they contradict each other in every possible way?
You can't.
It's just impossible. I mean, it is absolutely stupidly impossible. Do you think there's a reason that God uses the term stupid to describe those infected with Gentile religions? I mean, he says, you're stupid.
You're drunk and stupid.
Right. You're just stupid. And you know, and he says that those who embrace them are an abomination to him, that he hates them. I mean, the most hated man on the planet by God right now is the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean he is really got some competition. I mean, you've got the head of Boko Haram. You've got the head of the Islamic State. You know, you've got the Abominator.
Yeah, you've got imams all over the place.
Yeah, and yet the most hated man on the planet right now would be Bergoglio, Francis. Well,
Francis was a talking mule, wasn't he?
I don't know.
Well, you remember the movies, right?
Yeah, I know you.
I'm old. I remember old things.
Yeah, Scott just reminded me, and I'm sorry I got carried away with all of this. We've had Glenn on the line. I didn't mean to have you on hold so long, Glenn, but I'm so stupefied today by what I experienced yesterday. Please cut me some slack and forgive me for ignoring you.
You're so bullheaded, Yetta. Don't you know?
Yes.
A man who is gazillions of dollars, who lives in opulence in a castle behind 4 foot thick walls, when he, you know, flies into town on a chartered jet with an entourage, you know, that's just huge and closes off all the highways. Don't you know that you should listen to him when he tells you that you should be living in socialist poverty? You know.
Oh, of course. Of course.
You know, what's really pathetically stupid about the people not realizing how they're advocating their own demise is the baby boomer generation, okay?
Right.
The me
right.
generation, Generation X and Generation Next and all, have grown up addicted to consumerism culture, which is a product of capitalism. You know, Americans are so blinded by this. They don't care about anything beyond their noses if it doesn't have directly to do with their lifestyle, yet they're advocating, you know, the socialist poverty.
I didn't look to see if the aircraft was an Airbus, but I would assume that it was, and its engines were probably made by General Electric. The vehicle that he came in on, the airplane, was a product of capitalism. Even the little Fiat that he squeaked away one is a product of capitalism. Like capitalism, there is no Fiat. There is no airplane. Without capitalism, there is no Congress because there is no United States. I mean, what in the world is this man speaking at the dung of the devil? The reason that he's lecturing America for being rich and the rest of the world's impoverished is that the greatest experiment in world history with capitalism took place in the United States. Idiot? I mean, and then the morons applauding him like he's speaking the truth, when in fact what he's pointing out is the opposite of what he is claiming.
The man, they're hailing a man who's advocating their descent into poverty, or at least into an exceedingly diminished lifestyle.
Correct.
You know, Americans are lifestyle people. They don't care about anybody outside their own lifestyle. And yet here's a man who's advocating that their lifestyle be destroyed, and they're hailing him.
Yeah.
That's almost as pathetically stupid as these countries welcoming in Islam to destroy their culture.
Correct. While the leadership, both religious, political, and military, is perverted today and counterproductive,
yeah,
and absolutely and unequivocally plotting against the masses. The masses have only themselves to blame. They're being fooled by fools. When I listened to what that man, the Pope, had to say, what the Abominator had to say about him, I look at the face of Bonner, by the way, who is chairman of the Speaker of the House, the head of the Congress, Speaker of the House, Bonner. He is who is my neighbor, by the way, is resigning.
Boehner.
Yeah, Boehner's resigning. Which is at least a good thing.
Ill. Anybody sitting there that was doing what he was, he's
got a... he's out of his ever-loving mind. And he has no base of authority anymore. But for the Abominator and for this Pope to fool people as he has, because he's a megastar, he's a rock star, that tells you that the people who are swooning to him, even the media that's lapping him up, are stupid. They're being fooled by a fool. And he knows what he's doing. I mean, he is yanking their strings as if they were puppets, and they're just going along waving their arms and saying, oh, boy, I'm doing this. I've got free will. Yeah, he's pulling their strings.
Man, Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, got to be a fool to be fooled by a fool.
They're in love with their captor. They're in love with their would-be destroyer.
I
have to go, but I want to make one point. You were talking about Yosha's the diminished manifestation, you know, mm-hmm. the material manifestation of Yahweh.
Yeah.
You know, it makes so much more sense. It's so much easier when you address these issues, you know, about these expressions of Yahweh, rather than trying to wrestle with all the contradictions of the Trinitarian system. I wanted to point something up personally. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that way. You know, when the disciples said to Yosha, show us the Father, he says, don't you know, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. I don't think it's ever really possible to see Yahweh, you know, the Father, because he created us. He created dimensionality. He created energy and he created matter. We exist within that creation. He is transcendent of the creation, okay? So we can, like, feel his presence by the Ruach Kodesh, or we can see Yosha. You know, we will see Yosha. But the Father is transcendent. And as such, you know, because we're immanent, in theology they use the terms transcendent and immanent, we can, this is why Yahweh created Yosha. So for, as a touch point, as a point of relationship between us and him.
Yeah.
So I don't think in heaven you can really see the Father, see Yahweh.
Well, first of all, I think in when we are elevated to the seventh dimension, that whatever limitations we would have in a lesser dimension will be gone. But I would tell you this, that I think the most clear visual perspective on who Yahweh is, what he is like, is by reading his words, particularly when he uses symbolisms of Bereth, family relationship, and Ab, father, and El, almighty shepherd, to depict his nature, that through his words and through the metaphors that he has chosen to convey, that for example, the reference to light. We have the ability to see him in our minds, to understand who he is within our...
You're kind of tap dancing, I want to call you on this. You're tap dancing, okay?
Yeah.
We know Yahweh. We know him intimately. We know him through his words, mm-hmm. through the Rosh Hashanah, mm-hmm. and through Yosha. But in terms of, you know, of seeing the Father... Okay, seeing Yahweh. He is, even heaven is a created dimensional realm in his creation. It's not the earth, it's heaven. But this is, I believe, you know, with that interaction, show us the Father. He's saying, when you've seen me, you've seen the Father. I am, in other words, he is the manifestation. He's a diminished manifestation, even in heaven, even glorified in heaven. He's glorified relative to his appearance here.
I think he has his
appearance on the Mount of Transfiguration.
While heaven is a created place, when we are elevated to seven dimensions, we will not be limited to that created place. So your point that we will not be able to fully see Yahweh, who is transcendent of everything that he has created in heaven, is probably an accurate statement. But that does not mean that we won't be able fully see him as we are elevated to the same number. Look, I received a email this morning. And I want to tell you how I'm going to read the email and my response to it, and then I would like your reaction to it.
All right.
It's from a person whose name, we'll just use their initials, VM. How can the Messiah, this is M-A-S-S-I-A-H, of the New Testament be true if you believe the New Testament is false? VM, there is no reference to a M-A-S-S-I-A-H, and there is no true New Testament. Half of it, all of Paul's letters, are pure rubbish. Messiah is never used as a name or as a title in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, so it cannot be one of Yahweh's titles. The name Messiah, M-A-A-S-E-Y-A-H, is used 22 times, but never directly in reference to Yahusha. Both times Messiah is used in Daniel in reference to Yahusha, it is an adjective modifying messenger, indicating that this messenger would be set apart and prepared to serve. So why are you asking about the M-A-S-S-I-A-H? Moreover, Yahusha pointed to the Father, Yahweh, not to himself, making a question focused on the diminished manifestation of God, misdirected. The Torah, Prophets, and Psalms are true, according to Yahusha. He specifically stated that nothing Yahweh said has changed or would change. So there cannot be a New Testament. The Sermon on the Mount leaves no room whatsoever for Christianity. Most of the New Testament is in direct conflict with Yahweh's word. And thus, if Yahweh is truthful, the Christian New Testament is a lie. It is that simple.
Problem is you're debating terms that don't really exist. I mean, like New Testament, there is no New Testament.
Correct.
There were witness writings, and then you would, and then if you wanted to figure out the veracity of the witnesses, that's something else.
Well, it's really only three witness writings.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Matanyah,
because everybody else is comment and to someone
and Revelation. Those are the only three witness writings.
Mm-hmm.
Because the letters of Yahochanan are just letters. We don't even know if he authored them.
Yeah, we don't.
The Shimon Kefesh is indirectly linked to Mark, but because it's second hand, now it's hearsay.
Yeah.
And Luke wasn't anywhere near the place or the people or the time, so that's all hearsay.
Uh-huh.
So they're really the witness writings are three books.
And then we don't have anything, even in the Revelations past, what is it, about the 18th, 19th chapter, or something like that, that we could go back far enough to recognize it.
It ends in 17 as it relates to everything prior to
17.
The influence of Roman Catholicism. Yeah, you don't have anything from 18, so you know your statement's accurate. And then you also have the problem that Matanyah was written in Hebrew, and all we have is a Greek translation. And I want to tell you, lots lost in translation.
Oh, yeah.
And with Yahochanan, while you have some 15 or 20 pre-Constantine manuscripts of various parts of Yahochanan, there is no book that is altered is that one. You know, for example, the most famous story in it, the adulterous woman and writing in the sand, and, let him without sin cast the first stone, never occurred. You know, the oldest manuscript that's found in dates to the 8th century. Every manuscript, thousands of them prior to the 8th century, don't have the episode at all.
Yeah, so So if you're counting on that, but nothing about the this program, for that matter, or any of your books recommend that. We acknowledge it's there. We know that historically these certain people existed, and we know a little bit about what they wrote the best we can from the historical references. Yeah. You can see that what they quoted, what they said was a quote from Yahusha.
Yeah.
We know that he was the Word, therefore he was saying everything he said was in the Torah, so you can go back to the Torah and say, is that what he's talking about?
As a matter of fact, why even look beyond Matanyah?
Well, it's just an exercise, you know.
Yeah. Why even in Matanyah? He in the Sermon on the Mount, he explains exactly his place relative to the Torah, Yahweh's stance relative to the Torah's stance in our lives. And he says nothing in it's going to be annulled, nothing in it's going to be done away with. I did not come to annul it. You should not think that. Every stroke of every letter is going to stand so long as the heavens and earth stand. You know, why would you need to go beyond that? At that point, wouldn't you just turn to the Torah and see what it says?
Yeah, and he says it's complete.
Correct. Now, if you just want some flavor in terms of the end of human history, because we're approaching that time, you know, I think that the Olivet Discourse is fascinating. But the rest of it, what do you need to know it for? Why not just read the Torah? That's where he told you to go.